Welcome to the 206th episode of the Jamie Delaney Plant-Based Wellness Podcast. My name is Jamie Delaney, and I'm your host. I'm a plant-based cardiologist and endurance athlete living in Southwest Florida. Welcome. Thanks for listening. Well, I'm honing in on another ultra event. Next week, I'll be out to do the Mendocino 50K in California. The weather's supposed to be nice. It's more Floridian this year, supposedly. 50s to 60s, so it'll suit me just fine. Looking forward to challenging the hills and along the Pacific. It's a great race. Shout out to the Stanford Inn. They're a sponsor, so all vegan food, vegan at the end. Sid Garza Hillsman is the race director, if you listen to the Small Steps podcast. So look forward to seeing those guys. It's going to be a great weekend. We're taking some friends out with us to see the area and do some hiking as well. So I always look forward to getting out into California. So if you're running the race, I hope to see you there. I got back in the water again today. I'm slowly starting my swim training again for triathlon season. So after the Mendocino Ultra, we'll be back into triathlon training. So back to the water today for a cameo appearance, so to speak. No easy day from the master swim coach. I think we did about 3,100 yards. So it was good. Still felt good. And nice to see that weight training kind of keeps you in a little bit of swim shape. You lose feel for the water and certainly not as efficient. I've also been practicing my Wim Hof breathing. If you haven't looked into the Iceman and Wim Hof's some of the breathing techniques, I'm practicing that. And it seemed to help me recover a little bit today. The other thing that Wim Hof is known for is cold exposure. So I'm practicing the cold showers, because one of the things I don't like about swimming is getting in cold water. I dread it. I dread it the night before. I dread it driving to the pool. And once I'm in, I'm fine. But I just don't like it. I think about it the morning of the race. So I'm hoping that these cold water shower challenges gets me ready. And I have to say that, you know, even though I live in Florida and it was 66 degrees this morning and probably the water is 83 degrees, it felt warm to me. So I'm hoping that makes a little bit of a difference. But I actually am enjoying the cold showers and starting to adjust to that and feel invigorated afterwards. So if you haven't looked into some Wim Hof breathing and cold exposure, do that. And if you live up north and have been cold all winter long and are swearing at me now, I do apologize. So. And on that note, you know, this is a great time of year to be a gardener in Florida, because things are blooming. We have tomatoes coming up all over. We have people listened before, we have a tower garden, and we kind of throw the rotten tomatoes off the ledge, and we have two or three, four volunteer tomato plants even coming up between little decorative rocks, and they're actually blooming. So it's a great time to plant tomatoes in Florida. We have collards going, nice herb garden with a couple different kinds of thyme and cilantro and basil and oregano. Peppers are doing well. Parsley's doing well. Have white potatoes, russet potatoes coming up. Some sunflower seeds, some watermelon starting to come up as far as the vines go. This will be our first try at watermelon. And of course, they do grow well in Florida, but they probably go better when people use pesticides. There's a lot of aphids in the area, so we'll see if my watermelon take hold. So I hope so. Mangoes are still doing good. Guava's getting ready to bloom. A few avocados on. So it's a great time to go outside in the backyard and look at, assess the garden situation. Since we're talking about running and marathoning, there is a 70-year-old that broke the world record for the marathon, running at 2:54:23, so 2 hours and 54 minutes. That's a 6-minute and 39 second pace for the entire marathon. And so they took him into their lab and did a little research on him and put him on a treadmill in the New England Journal. It was written up, actually. It's probably the first time that a marathoner has been studied and published in the New England Journal. He has 19.1% body fat for a 70-year-old, so he's a lean fella. Cholesterol was 173. He runs 40 to 50 miles a week in training. I also heard an interview with him on an ultra marathon podcast, and he trains by doing ultra marathons in the off marathon season, and then he runs marathons, you know, during marathon season. And he does these 50-100-mile races as a training. And then when he starts to ramp up, he does speed work for his marathon work. But the guy has a VO2 max of 46.9, which that is about the average for a 26-year-old. His lactic threshold on the treadmill was 6 minutes and 54 seconds, and his VO2 max was 95%. The interesting thing is that he ran during the marathon because, like I said, this pace during the marathon was 6 minutes and 39 seconds, but his lactic acid threshold was 6 minutes and 54 pace. So that means he runs above his lactic threshold, which is really unheard of. Even Kenyans typically run at about 85% of their lactic acid threshold. So, you know, he's, you know, quite a phenomenon to be able to run greater than his lactic acid threshold. Usually, most marathoners run 75 to 80%. So he's quite an elite guy. I would guess that, you know, the training, the long hours doing the 50-100 milers is what gets him to be able to sustain his heart rate at high levels for longer periods of time, because he does such long, slow training, you know, with the marathon training. So pretty good. He's, you know, unfortunately the guy's not plant-based, but he eats a pretty healthy diet and really watches his intake. And, you know, he eats a lot of vegetables, so he eats a little bit of meat, but the guy is clearly, you know, burning a tremendous amount of calories and keeps his weight down. So it's quite impressive if you're out there and you're a marathon runner. You know, there's always hope. Keep training. When you get to be 70 years old, you know, you might get there. So that's my hope. I'm going to keep going and keep training. So if nothing else, I'll be the last person standing in my age group. I have to contrast that with some people that I see that, you know, a lot of times when people get older and they retire, it's thought of, or the tradition is to slow down and take it easy. And I guess it was, you know, with unions and Social Security that this magic age of retirement of 65 came about, 60, 65. And so people look forward to retiring without a purpose in mind. And there's a marked decline when people quit working as far as their mental function, memory. And part of it comes from lack of stimulation, lack of mental activity and mental challenges, but also from the accumulation of metabolic waste as people get older, and the decreased burning of calories so that you accumulate more of this waste. You're not burning it off. You know, unlike our marathon runner who is, you know, burning lots of calories every day, if you have a sedentary lifestyle and you're eating, you know, 2,000 calories a day or 2,500 calories or 3,000 calories, but you're burning 1,500, 2,000 calories, then you're starting to accumulate fat mass, which is metabolically active, increasing inflammation and inflammatory hormones, increasing clotting factors. People are starting to eat out more, you know, a lot more salt. Blood pressure goes up. They start to accumulate medications and start to see, you know, some mental decline, or the nice way of putting it is mild cognitive impairment. And so the question is, what do you do about it? To date, there's no medication that has been found to reverse the decline in memory and certainly reverse dementia or Alzheimer's. We define Alzheimer's as an accumulation of these neurofibrillatory tangles and amyloid proteins in the neurons. And then there's a vascular dementia where there's decreased blood flow. There was a new medication that was tested looking at, it actually removes, it's a it actually removes the amyloid precursors by a cleaving enzyme called protein cleaving enzyme. And this drug was stopped in trials of people with Alzheimer's because it didn't do any good, so they thought they would try it in people that had some memory impairment and MRIs that showed some of these amyloid plaques developing, and they stopped it early as well because it doesn't help. And that's kind of where we are with all of these medications. And so the best way to treat dementia is to not get it. And if you have mild cognitive decline or know somebody that does, then this is the time to be extremely aggressive with what we can do from a nutrition aspect and an activity aspect. And I had an interaction with a patient recently, and you know, there was great frustration. He is in the stages, early stages of having some memory impairment, and it seems to be progressing. And the question is what to do about it. Some people like to look for causes that are, you know, what we call zebras, potential causes, maybe causes of dementia, but not necessarily treatable, mold or Lyme or some sort of toxins. But again, the treatments available to reverse some of these things are not known. So, you know, it seems the normal thing to do, or the best thing to do, is again be aggressive in the treatment that has no side effects or no harm. And I kind of liken the aggressive nature that we should take as far as nutrition goes with if you had cancer. Something bad is going on and it is progressive, and you want to do the best that you possibly can to get it under control. So this is not the time, you know, to have a junk food vegan diet. So what can you possibly do? Well, we know that eating greens will increase nitric oxide production, and it also, there's some show and some studies with early decline that improving nitric oxide communication between neurons improves memory and improves function. So an easy thing is to make sure you're getting 4 to 5 cups of nitric oxide producing greens a day. And, you know, it's just to go over it again, kale and spinach and Swiss chard, any kind of cabbage, broccoli, anybody in the broccoli family, broccolini, broccoli raw, Brussels sprouts, cauliflower, and get 4 to 5 cups in a day. And, it, you know, ways to get that in is, you know, put it down and put some soup over it, microwave it. You know, have a big salad at lunchtime. Make sure, you know, just like it's a medication, that you're getting these greens in. A lot of people, as they get older, they don't like to chew, and which is unfortunate because they eat a lot of soft things that result in a lot of calories and a lot of weight gain. So I think you should at least chew a salad once a day, you know, and the mixed greens, not iceberg lettuce. Now, if you're going to eat iceberg lettuce, you need to eat a whole head of it at a sitting. But certainly mix some dark greens, arugula in there, spinach in with that, and throw, if you don't like greens, then throw them in soups. We do a fiesta bean soup that we had at our conference, and that's we had in class this week, that we actually put the greens right in the soup and chop the kale or Swiss chard or whatever in there. We do a green soup with bok choy and mustard greens and collard greens. So there's lots of ways you can get those greens in soups and get that in 4 to 5 cups a day. The other things, you know, fruit with color, berries, cranberries, pomegranates, blackberries, raspberries, they're all starting to come into season. You know, make sure you're getting not just, you know, a sprinkling or a garnish on your oatmeal, but make those, you know, make the fruit the majority of your breakfast and the oatmeal the garnish. To get as many of these berries as you can, make sure you're having fruit after lunch and after dinner. and making sure you're not having toxins. So this is the time to get the sugar out of the diet and to be very diligent about getting the oil out of the diet, that anything that causes inflammation. And certainly animal products and dairy. I'm going to make that as a given that people aren't eating any animal products. But this is not the time for the Beyond Burgers and the Gardein products and the Boca Burgers and so forth. They're not going to do you any good. You have to look at things as, how is this actually going to help me? Might it mean not eating out as much or choosing differently when you eat out? I have to think that is better than taking a risk with your brain function, because at that point, if you start to have some decline, you're right on the edge. And so there's no room for error, just like when you have the diagnosis of cancer. There's really no room for error. It's when the scale is already, the scale, you're moving the notch and then it drops down. You're already in the danger zone. So you need to do what you can to back things up a little bit. And so you have to be very, very aggressive with the diet. And there's no downside. You can make great meals that contain greens and great desserts that contain fruit. You can do sorbets with berries, blackberries and raspberries. It's one of my favorite things at night to do is to take literally a small bag of organic raspberries and a banana and put that in the Vitamix and make a sorbet. It's fabulous and it's good for you. So you have to be aggressive with doing this and versus the therapies that have no upside and have a tremendous amount of downside. Medications like Aricept actually cause people's heart rate to go down. A lot of these medications increase the risk of suicide and depression. It's really tough dealing with this disease as it is, but if you have a medication that's going to make people more depressed, then it makes it so much worse. And, the other thing is getting out and maintaining a presence in the community, perhaps a dance class, a Zumba class, or a line dancing class, or yoga, outside activities that are around people that involve physical activity as well as mental activity, making sure, continuing to balance the checkbook if you do, continuing to take on mental tasks so that you stay sharp. It is very, very important. And, we've talked before on this podcast as far as, keeping your musculature strong and keeping your body fat down. Again, our marathoner, his weight is, his body fat's 19%. I think that we accept people being overweight when they get over 65 as the norm, but it really needs, it needs not to be, because the abdominal fat is very metabolically active, making all these inflammatory hormones that aren't going to help things. Leg strength is the other thing, because people aren't moving around and doing outside activities, especially here in Florida, people move into a condo, they don't have to mow their grass, they don't have a garden to tend to. Their legs get weak. So it's really important to, get that walk in every day and do strength training, squats, bending, make sure you can get off the ground, lunges. Doesn't have to be in a gym. It can be at home. But I think people have to be very diligent about doing things to keep their legs strong. I was reading today, there's a movement out there that where people meet and do stair climbing in gyms, and they go up and down. And one of the places where it started, it was in Harvard, where they went up and down all the steps, all 35 sections. So if you have a place that's a high school, go up and challenge yourself. I think that you should never quit challenging yourself and putting the physical carrot out there as well as the mental carrot. Carrot out there. I've heard of authors that wrote more books after age 65 than they did before 65. So I think just because you retire, you need to be very careful that things don't stop. You need to be to push your mentation and push your physical limits as well. We have a yoga practice in our office once a week, and I've seen people make great strides. A lot of the people couldn't get off the ground when they first started yoga, so we started with chair yoga, and now people aren't even using a chair, including my 85-year-old mother. So they're getting off the ground, and it's a huge accomplishment to do that. And people are they're much safer in their homes. They have a sense of accomplishment by coming and doing these things that they never thought they could, and now they're trying other things. So, you know, I think that's really, really important. We had a member this week come in, and she has planning on spending June in Africa doing a safari, and she wants to get in shape for the safari. And I think that's a great thing to have a bucket list and then to train for the bucket list. And, you know, I've always used marathons as a means to take a vacation, because I lived in Florida, and where you're going to go if you usually go to Florida for vacation. So I started doing marathons as a way to travel. I'd schedule the marathon, so that kept me honest in my training, and it was someplace new to go and a new adventure. And it's become a love of mine to be able to go someplace and run a marathon. And it's a great way to see an area, tour a city. I've done marathons in Rome and Paris and Dublin, and it's a great way to tour a place. You can't get lost when you're following thousands of other people up and down the streets. So I encourage you to, you know, sign up for something that gives you motivation to train, whether it's, you know, a trip or that requires a lot of walking or a challenge, or some sort of athletic event or some sort of group that you have to meet people in order to train on a regular basis. You know, I hadn't been to my master's swim class for a while, and, you know, I really enjoyed seeing everybody there. And, swimming with people, it's a whole different environment than going out and running with the dogs most morning. I love running with the dogs, but it's also fun to be in a group setting where, you know, people push you. I have another member getting ready to retire, but she's also planning her next occupation. So I think that's a great thing, is to have something in mind that you want to do when you quit your first job or when you retire from your first job, is what's going to be your second job. It gives you perhaps the opportunity to follow your passion and do something that you really want to do. We had a member that, typically would have went out on her birthday and ate vegan junk food, but instead went to the beach to do a painting session. So changing your activities that they don't so much circle around food and more around activities is another way to keep your mind sharp, keep your body sharp, and stay away from some of the junk food. So just a few ways to look into things. Along this continuation, there's a new drug out that's just been released for the treatment of osteoporosis. It supposedly increases bone density without causing bone degradation. And of course, the scare tactics go in the article. About 10 million people in the United States have osteoporosis. Worldwide, 200 million people have brittle bones. 1 in 3 women, 1 in 5 men suffer a fracture because of osteoporosis, often the hip or the spine. For many, the break leads in a downward spiral of disability. I think that's such such a scare tactic. The name, the brand name is Eventity, and there was 2 trials looking at this medication before it was approved. It's approved for only postmenopausal women with a high risk of fracture, and carries a warning label that it may increase your risk of heart attack or stroke, and it's intravenous. Interestingly, one of the studies, they report spinal fractures occurring in 127 out of 2,046 patients, as opposed to 243 out of 2,047 patients taking alendronate, which is an earlier drug. So the reality of it is, in the old drug, there was 12% risk of fractures, 5% in the new drug. However, the new drug had a 2.5% increase in heart attacks versus 1.9% increase in the older alendronate. So these medications, a minimal decrease in strokes in reality, I mean, I'm sorry, not strokes, but in fractures in reality, but an increased risk in heart attacks and strokes, to the point where if somebody's had a heart attack or stroke in the last year, they don't qualify for this drug. But again, the population that one would prescribe something for osteoporosis tends to be in the older population anyway, so these people are already at risk for a heart attack or stroke, most likely. You know, if you take people greater than 65 on the standard American diet, most of the time they have underlying vascular disease. So, you know, their heart attack waiting to happen, and we're going to give them this medication that, you know, basically a 7% improvement in fracture risk. The alternative would be to get the animal protein out of your diet, get the acidity out of your diet, and exercise, and build bone strength, you know, do weight-bearing exercise without any side effects. And, you know, people that have hip fractures typically are unstable, decreased balance. So, again, Zumba, yoga are great things to improve someone's balance as well as strength training. So we're really, again, just defaulting to this quick fix of some injection that may cause harm as opposed to do good. If somebody were to be walking 3 or 4 miles a day, doing yoga, and eating a plant-based diet, the risk of a heart attack would be significantly less than the general population, and probably null if you look at Dr. Esselstyn's diet. So you can make yourself heart attack-proof with a plant-based diet, and you probably can make yourself fracture-proof with the plant-based diet and strength training. So, you know, it's very, very frustrating when, you know, people are talked into this, and the scare tactics that are used, you know, with some of these medications. The other thing I think we need to get away with is pretend products mimicking products or, you know, animal-based foods that made us sick in the first place. Cheeseburgers aren't healthy when they come from a cow. So to try to design something that's exactly like a cheeseburger just so we don't eat animals is really, to me, not the answer. And it's certainly not a plant-based alternative. And again, with people that have risk factors for cardiovascular disease and dementia, eating these burgers are not health foods, and they're not healthy alternatives. And, you know, they have the same amount of fat that a regular burger has in them. They have, you know, protein isolates that the body doesn't know how to handle. And they're soft foods that we don't have to chew, and we don't have any idea when we're full. So you put them on a soft bun with this soft burger, and, you know, serve it with some French fries, and people say they're eating vegan, and I don't understand why I'm sick. Well, you know, yes, we do. And now there's a new egg product out that apparently is outselling egg beaters and other liquid eggs. And, of course, the claim to fame is it, you know, cooks like an egg. You can use it like baking. You can scramble it. You can use it in an omelet. It doesn't contain cholesterol. No animals were killed for it. And it's from mung bean protein isolate, along with canola oil, jellum gum, calcium citrate, carrot and turmeric extracts, onion puree, salt, soy lecithin, and tetrasodium pyrophosphate. Tetrasodium pyrophosphate was used initially as a cleaner. It's used to take tartar off in some toothpaste. Certainly not a health food by any stretch of the imagination. And again, you know, we've all come to the conclusion that eating eggs, you know, eggs are not a health food. There's no reason to eat eggs. So why do we want to mimic one? Again, just, you know, so it reminds us of yesteryear when we ate things that made us sick, but this might not make us as sick. And when you're eating one of these products for breakfast or lunch, you're not eating the oatmeal with that big cup of blueberries and fruit and fiber. You're getting no fiber from these products. You're not eating the big green salad with all the vegetables and nitric oxide producing greens. You're getting more calories. You're getting more inflammation from the canola oil. You can bet your bottom dollar that this is, you know, not some cold pressed pure canola oil. The next plan is to take chicken cells and mend it with these mung bean protein isolates and make some sort of fake meat that looks like chicken and tastes like chicken without really killing the chicken, just using some cells. So, it's a great thing for industry and marketing, but it's not making the world any healthier. And again, it's giving everyone this false sense of security that there's some magic bullet out there that you can do things as bad as you want and not have to participate and still remain healthy. And, to date, it's not true. Maybe, someday people will come up with ways to extract bad things from your cells, but right now they don't, so you continue to, put them into your body and bad things are going to continue to happen. We'll save some animals, and that's a great thing. But in the process, all those people, there's not that many vegans now. So if the vegans eat poorly and die off, then they're not going to be much of a voice in saving the animals. So I think that, people need to look at it that way as well. If you're going to fight the fight, you need to be healthy to fight the fight for plant-based nutrition in our environment and saving the animals. And eating pretend hot dogs and hamburgers and pretend eggs is not the way about it. And to me, it's kind of a, a way of copping out and, not eating your vegetables. Learn to chew, as Dr. Goldhammer would say. On the other hand, we're kind of winding up cold and flu season, and some people have had bronchitis or sinus infections and ultimately had to take antibiotics, and their gut microbes are all a mess. And, people, again, reach for the pill, the probiotics. And there may be some merit that the enzymes, when they break down from the probiotic little bugs that get killed by your stomach acids, they release an enzyme that may be a food of sorts for your microbe in your stomach to help things out. Certainly, if someone eats a poor diet and takes probiotics, it's not going to work. But fermented foods are a great source of, a great source of probiotics. And sauerkraut is a great one. And we have a couple recipes that we like with sauerkraut. And today in class, we actually did a sauerkraut Reuben with tempeh. So got tempeh. Shout out to the Gainesville Tempeh Company. You can order big blocks of tempeh. And we sauteed that with some sauerkraut and made a Russian dressing out of a silken tofu, a spicy pickle relish, and a little sugar-free ketchup. And it was great. Served it on an Ezekiel muffin. We actually came home and had that with a baked potato and some tomato and peppers and onions. So that was a great dish. Another great dish that we do with sauerkraut is to take steamed cabbage and then add sauerkraut to that dish, as well as tomatoes and white beans. And you can add gnocchi to that. So that's a great dish. We do a cabbage soup with sauerkraut, a little bit of tomato in that. And then the other thing is to do a baked potato and take sauerkraut and a little sriracha together. Makes a great lunch. And you can put that over a bed of greens. And so you have your greens as well as the sauerkraut. So of course, sauerkraut is cabbage, but you can get even more. Add some spinach under there. So there's a few ways to get your sauerkraut in. If you have high blood pressure, you can actually make your own sauerkraut without salt, or rinse the sauerkraut that you get, organic kraut that you get in the grocery store. Just rinse it in some water and get some of the sodium out. Passover and Easter are right around the corner, and there are a lot of substitutes that have been, for Passover, rabbi-approved swats, roasted beets in place of lamb shanks, boiled potato or avocado for the hard-boiled eggs. Matzo ball soup can be vegan, make it with vegetable broth. Roasted horseradish cauliflower, making kugel with potatoes, spiralizing them. You can make a potato cheese sauce. So just, Google vegan Passover food. Some of the recipes, just hold the oil. I've never made a recipe yet that I didn't, when I held the oil and it didn't work. And as far as Easter dinner, you know, we always just focus on the sides that we would have eaten, you know, sweet potatoes and lima beans and, you know, a bright salad with citrus and pomegranate. A lentil loaf or tempeh can be used as the main dish. I saw in Harry and David, they took pears and decorated them, you know, as you would Easter eggs, but put decoration and make bunnies out of pears and or the cutie oranges. So that's something to do with the kids. So you just have to be a little creative. You can do puddings with, you know, made with tofu and a few cashews, whether it's a lemon pudding or a banana pudding. So, again, all kinds of things you can do for desserts in family gatherings over the holidays. So, you know, don't let your health slide just because you're celebrating. Always ask yourself, how is this helping my health? How is this helping to achieve my, you know, ultimate goals of a healthy, active life? And if eating those things don't fit into that, then just let them alone. I had a patient this week that had some candies in her purse, and they were sugar-free Werther's candy drops, and they were sugar-free, and she assumed that they were calorie-free, and she was eating a bag every 1 to 2 days. Well, you know, they have about 10 calories apiece, so you know, it'd be 50 calories for five of those things, and you know, a bag would be a couple hundred calories. And it adds up throughout the day. It adds up, and it's, again, not doing anything good. There's alcohols, there's sugar, they're a chemistry experiment. So they're not doing your body any good when you could be actually having a piece of fruit that, provides vitamin C and antioxidants. So, you know, continuously think about, you know, how's this gonna make me feel better and do better? And, you know, again, when it comes to the fruit, I always find it's better if it's, you know, chopped up and prepared. You know, taking an orange, you might be less likely to eat it as if you had already peeled it and it's in a bag. Or I like to take sliced apples that are, you know, already peeled for dessert at lunchtime. So if it's already prepared, the fruit's already cut up, it's much more appetizing and pleasant to look at as far as, you know, a snack as opposed to, you know, just a whole piece of fruit sitting on the table that you might eat. And especially for kids, I think it's easier, and people are in transition, it's easier to have it already prepared. So I hope this next week you have a happy holidays, whether it's Passover or Easter. And I look forward to giving you my race report. I hope it's a good one. Eat, plan strong. Again, stay focused on color. Try to stay away from substitutes. Look at things that you have to chew as a blessing. Gretchen says hello, and I look forward to speaking with you soon. So happy plant eating, and get out and move and enjoy yourself and get some sunshine.